So let me just say, imagine the spiral, like if you were to look at it from the top down. So you see it more as a circle from the top down. And what you have at the top of the circle, you have your identity, the way you see yourself, who I am. So you might say things like, I'm lazy, or I procrastinate, or I'm never accountable. I never finish. I never start what I... So those are the kinds of things that you say about yourself, the way you see yourself. And the way you see yourself affects your, at the bottom of the circle, you have your behavior. And with your behavior, it's often reflecting the way you see yourself. But the catch here is that your behavior also continues to affirm the way you see yourself, especially when it's in alignment with that identity, right? That bad identity. So like if you think I'm a procrastinator and then you procrastinate, that's only going to keep affirming that procrastination identity. And you just keep spiraling with that. And as you spiral, that gets tighter and tighter until it's like so interwoven, not just how we see ourselves, but the ways we behave. The good news though, is that if we spiral down, we can also spiral up.
Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms podcast. Joining me for her second appearance on the show is fellow podcaster Monica Packer. This conversation is a continuation on the topic of bad habits. Today we explore the roots of bad habits and the importance of understanding the underlying reasons for these behaviors. We also discussed how self-perception and identity influence our habits. Monica also shares practical tools for addressing numbing behaviors and making intentional choices to support our desired feelings. It's a jam-packed episode, so I can't wait for you to listen to it. But before we get there, I quickly want to remind you, if you have not yet left a rating and review on iTunes, please do so. It takes less than 30 seconds, but it is so helpful for others to find the Minimalist Moms podcast. And then, of course, I want to share a minimalist resource of the week here at the beginning. And this week's resource is the book Scarcity Brain: Fix Your Craving Mindset and Rewire Your Habits to Thrive with Enough. I thought it would be the perfect resource to share for today's episode. In the book, author Michael Easter asked the question, are we hardwired to crave more? From food and stuff to information and influence, why can't we ever get enough? So far, I'm loving this book, and it's backed by tons of scientific studies, experiments, interviews, and data. You can tell that Easter did his homework here. And it's a phenomenal book if you're yearning to learn about why we crave the things that we crave and how we can learn to live with enough. So again, the book is Scarcity Brain: Fix Your Craving Mindset and Rewire Your Habits to Thrive with Enough by author Michael Easter. I'll be sure to include the book in the show notes. And with that, let's get into this conversation with Monica Packer. Well, Monica, thanks again for joining me on the Minimalist Moms podcast.
Oh, it's so good to be back.
I know. I'm so glad to have you here. You joined me a little over a year ago to talk about small shifts and a more effective approach to bad habits. So this is going to be a slight continuation of that. You were so knowledgeable in that first episode, which I'll be sure to link in the show notes for listeners. But before we get there, why don't you go ahead, quickly introduce yourself, and we'll get to it.
Yeah, my name is Monica Packer. I'm primarily known as a podcaster at a podcast called About Progress, where we are about progress made practical. We focus on personal development outside of perfectionism, which is a big part of my story and also a big part of my community's story as well, of trying to learn a new way to grow and to change outside of the all or nothing metrics and prescriptions we're so often given, often couched in these positive toxic positivity maxims that are all over the internet and can feel really good in the moment, but then are not practical when we actually face our real lives. And I never thought I was a habit person, actually thought I was pretty bad at habits for a long time. And, you know, they can go back to the other episode that we recorded together to hear more about my story. But just a quick refresher there is I hit a big plateau with my own progress outside of perfectionism. I'd made a lot of progress and better knowing who I was and making quality time for having some hobbies in my life and making time for self-care and things like that. But my plateau was that my life wasn't reflecting my values. So even though I knew better who I was, like my day-to-day life wasn't supporting who I knew I was and who I wanted to be. And it just started with me needing to work on sleep, which has been a longstanding, really hard, bad habit of mine of, you know, procrastinating bedtime and all that. And then it just kind of evolved into me really diving deeply into habit formation for women in particular and why we need to do it differently and ways that we can do that, even with our really demanding schedules and limited time and low energy and low support and all those things.
I'm curious to check back in. So like I said, that was a year ago that we had that conversation. How are you doing? Have you been able to stick to everything? Something that you had said to me that really stuck with me is that you had family photos taken and you looked tired or like you didn't love the way that you looked. And again, we're not just saying that we should create better habits for vanity's sake, but you said it was like a year later, you had your photos taken again and you looked refreshed. You felt more vibrant. You looked happier and you knew that it had been because of all that work that you had put in the last year. And I don't know, that really sticks with me. I think about that all the time.
Oh, I love that that stuck with you. It's funny because that whole story was about 5 or even 6 years ago. And now I think I look the way I did then in my tired photos because I've aged, I'm getting older. I've also added a fifth child to our family. So I will say, like, how am I doing? And if we're talking about this habit-wise, I'll tell you, 2023 was the year of my habits all going to baselines or being taken off the table completely. Adjusting to a fifth child was way harder than I thought it would be. And I'm a realist going into having children. So I'll say I already had pretty realistic expectations and I just got taken for a wild ride of adjusting to having a newborn in our lives again after 5 years of not having a baby in the home. And all throughout that, though, I have to say I'm proud of myself for many reasons. And one of them is I'm proud that I gave myself a year of grace and compassion, that I allowed myself that time to really rest and be okay, even okay not being okay. It was pretty frustrating. It was hard. It was hard to know that I couldn't even empty a full dishwasher by the end of the day. You know, it was difficult to go from being so overly productive to having very little to show for my day. And so I'm proud of myself for that grace I gave myself. And I'm also proud that I was able to maintain the habits that make the biggest of difference for me, and to do so in ways that also matched my season, which meant that they were not the ideal versions. They were the baseline versions of those habits. They were the ways that the smallest and simplest ways that I could support myself. And to see that they actually did do that was really edifying. It really edified me, but also edified my work, which I had already done for several years on habit formation. But then to like really test it out in extreme ways myself was really both gratifying and edifying to see like, oh no, this does work.
So you coach people and you have a podcast where you share how to make progress, again, not perfection, just doing a little bit every day, just showing up, being consistent. But what have you heard from other moms? I'm just trying to hit some of these things that maybe people don't think of as bad habits.
Well, it's funny. So many women come to work on habits and they have a habit that they think they want to work on. And what we end up working on is something different. And that can be for two big reasons. And one is because it's kind of a give a mouse a cookie game with habit formation where you think, oh, I want to work on my morning. But really what you need to work on is your night so that you can have a better morning routine so that you can actually wake up when you want to and all those things. Or the second reason is because what they want to work on is a quote unquote bad habit. But in order to do that, they need to understand what that bad habit is trying to do, because it is trying to serve a purpose in your life. And as part of that, to realize that it largely points to a lack of support in other ways and other good habits. So they may come to me wanting to work on phone use or pressing snooze or procrastinating bedtime or not exercising or even, yeah, yelling at their kids, when really what they need to work on first is a good habit that helps support them where they need it the most so that that bad habit can just naturally dissipate over time or that they have the tools they need to more intentionally work on it.
I don't feel like we ever talked about how your spouse supported you in your habit change. What did that look like?
You know what? I feel like that's a question no one has asked me before. And I'm sitting here trying to think about that in real time. And I'll just kind of go with my more knee-jerk reaction there. I have a very supportive spouse, and he's always been very supportive of me and very non-judgmental. But I will say that I've always just done my own thing, personal development-wise and just life-wise. So it was never like a, hey, you need to work on this kind of situation, or hey, you need to do better in this area. And it also wasn't like I needed him to help support me in the shift. But I think that's just reflective of our relationship in general, is that I tend to feel supported by him in general, period. So maybe that's not the answer a lot of women can relate to, is maybe they have spouses who kind of sabotage the development of good habits. Maybe people are afraid in their family of them getting better. I've seen that happen often with coaching with women where they're like, I'm trying to work on exercising, but it's like my husband doesn't want me to do that because it makes him feel insecure about his own lack of exercising. So he like makes mean comments about it, or he's just doing, you know, he's trying to distract me, or like my, you know, kids, right? There's all these scenarios that can absolutely influence the way that you work on your habits, for sure.
Absolutely. I would say I'm somewhat the same. My husband and I think one of the things I love the most about our relationship is that we are very independent, and we come together in ways that are maybe in contrast, but build one another up. But I feel like a lot of my self-help, quote, I'm putting that in air quotes, has always just been somewhat separate from him. But I will say he's given me permission to fail. He allows me to fail, and he won't necessarily step in and save me. And I actually need that. I need to learn my own lessons. Not everyone is that way. But if I fail, I can come back, maybe even process with him. But it's like, I'm not going to stop you from what you need.
And I've also found in so many things I have grown and progressed in throughout the past 8 years that I've been working on this whole experiment of progress outside of perfectionism. It's never been my husband's name is Brad. So it's never been like, Brad, this is what I've learned and I'm applying it. So now you need to. But somehow along the way, I feel like he's naturally started to work on things too himself. He's become a way more consistent exerciser. He's a really early riser now. Like, we go to bed pretty early too. He's also learned to cook a lot and help like do more things around the house, and in large part because of a pretty terrible pregnancy and then, you know, recovery. So, you know, sometimes these things just, they come along for the ride as you're just naturally living them out and you have patience with people. But if you are having problems with someone who is sabotaging your progress, I want to tell you that you're, even though I haven't personally experienced that in my marriage, and hopefully you haven't either, Diane, it's one of those things, if you have, you're not alone. I do hear this.
Are you tired of clothing that wears down after just a few uses? Well, look no further than Caden Lane's bamboo pajamas. With innovative features like roll-down ankles, they're designed to grow with your little one, saving you money on constant replacements. I'm loving these pajamas for my growing four-year-old. Founded in 2005 by a single mom with a vision for better, cuter children's clothing, Caden Lane is dedicated to making moms' lives easier. From their Color Me pajamas that turn bedtime into a fun adventure to outfits with hidden zips and snaps for hassle-free dressing, every detail is crafted with care. And if you're already dreaming of summer days, Caden Lane's swim collection has you covered. Plus, with matching swimsuits for the whole family, you can make a splash in style. Even if you don't have a baby or toddler, these swimsuits make perfect gifts. I'm gifting my sister-in-law matching suits for summer, and I've already received the package, and the quality is wonderful. I can't wait to see how they look at the pool this summer. Caden Lane is your one-stop shop for all your newborn, infant, and toddler apparel. Head to cadenlane.com/minimalist and use code minimalist for 20% off your order. Once again, that's cadenlane.com/minimalist for 20% off, and make sure you use my promo code minimalist so they know that I sent you.
So I was telling you before we jumped on the call, I've been reading this book called Scarcity Brain, Fix Your Craving Mindset and Rewire Your Habits. And I was trying to summarize what this man had said. It's Michael Easter. So he was saying, and I'm pulling this from his book, everyone likes to focus on developing good new habits. But I want to know how we can resolve the behaviors that hurt us most. Because here's the thing, it doesn't matter how much gas we give new habits if we don't resolve our bad ones. We still have our foot on the brake. So I really like that, because I do think sometimes I've heard to build a new habit, you replace a bad one. But if there is some deeper root to why you have that bad behavior, I do think it's a Band-Aid. What are your thoughts?
I believe it's a Band-Aid too. And I think we can all understand this, like when we've gone on a social media fast, let's say that's one of our bad habits, is just feeling like we're scrolling social media. And we do really well about doing that. But all of a sudden, our online shopping goes up. or our emotional eating goes up, or like something else. Like there's some other kind of coping behavior, in other words, a bad habit that takes its place when we haven't dealt with the roots. So I'm sure he has a lot of science behind that. And I think he's right. You do need to deal with the bad habits. But in my experience, I would say that it's largely that you need to understand the roots of the bad habits. And knowing the roots is what can help you create good habits that are not band-aids, or trying to fix bad habits in ways that are not band-aids either. And I think he's right. Ultimately, no matter what side of this you're working on, it's a band-aid unless you really understand what's going on beneath your habit. And actually, this goes to a habit truth I don't think we talked about. And it's so often we think bad habits are bad, and really, they're not bad. They're not innately bad. And unless your bad habit is like killing someone or something that's really immoral and against your values, that's not most people. It's mostly things like we just talked about, you know, gaming too long, or being on your phone too much, or watching TV too much, you know, or procrastination as a habit in general of a way of coping behaviorally wise. And we think those habits are bad. But the truth is that they are trying to serve a purpose. And they're doing it in ways that are not functioning right and are not in alignment with your life. So they do feel bad. And the consequences, the results of them are bad because they're out of alignment with who you are, but they're not innately bad. And my quick example of that is one of the habits that I am trying to work on this year is to relax better. And that means I am purposely trying to stop being productive, not because I'm overproductive, just because my brain kind of goes on fire at night. And one of my ways of doing things is I get more amped up and I start doing more and more and more. And I miss my window, right, of going to sleep, essentially. So in order for me to work on that, I'm trying to watch TV at night with my spouse. And for many people, that's the bad habit they're trying to work on. So it's not about bad habits are inherently bad. It's that they're trying to serve a purpose, but not well. And also the other part of why they feel bad is because we're not doing them intentionally. We're not choosing the amount of time we want to be on our phone or on the video game or procrastinating something. It just quote unquote happens. So to better understand that, we got to start with that big picture view of like bad habits are innately bad. Let's remove the shame from the behavior itself, because shame perpetuates the behavior. It doesn't help it. It only makes it happen more. And there's so much science behind that. Let's remove the shame. And then let's start asking questions. What is this habit trying to do? How is it trying to help me in ways that I need that I might not be realizing, because instead I'm just getting angry with myself and disappointed in myself and frustrated with the bad habit and its consequences in my life?
Absolutely. I'm just going to pull from my own example. This is my show after all. So just something as simple as last night. I, in my 20s, really struggled with various eating disorders, binge eating, like not eating enough, exercising too much. And I finally feel like in my 30s, it's like sometimes it'll creep back in, but I feel like I finally just said, food is neutral. You're not good or bad. This was a choice you made, and who knows why you made these choices. So I would say I'm pretty disciplined about what I eat, but sometimes I'm not. And last night, my husband was out of town. I had the kids for days by myself, and I ended up eating like 4 of my mother-in-law's chocolate chip cookies. Not the best decision. But also I started feeling that shame of like, you've been so good about not eating too much sugar, especially mindlessly while you're watching a show. So I started to notice that. And then I was like, no, you don't deserve to starve tomorrow because you did this. You don't deserve to be more rigid with your food tomorrow. Just do better in the next meal. You probably did that because you were a little bit stressed out. And just talking myself through some of the habits, I think a lot of behavior change, habit change comes down to what you were saying of what are the things that we're telling ourselves? What are the tracks that we have in our mind? Because sometimes we need to break that cycle that is spiraling. And I just have found that the gentler that I've been with myself, the more long-lasting my habit change has been.
First, thank you for telling us about that, because that's actually my history too. I know that very, very well. And so much of what we've learned and, you know, making progress in that area of our lives applies to so many others. And to me, it kind of connects to one hidden piece of this habit puzzle that I think a lot of people do not make the connection to at all, but can honestly change so much. And it's identity. And that might seem like a far-fetched thing to people, but it's not. Let me tell you, I host a 3-week live courses on habit formation, and I just finished one. And that was the biggest takeaway for the women, is realizing just how much the way they saw themselves influenced the way that they were forming habits, for bad, for better, and for worse. And so that's one thing we can actually talk about, is what you just modeled there is just that ability to step back, to give yourself compassion, to separate your identity, meaning the shame, from your behaviors, to really acknowledge what ways they were trying to serve and help you, and instead make shifts that are going to help you come back to knowing who you really are. And that all comes down to a cycle. There's the same cycle works on both ways. We talk a lot about spiraling down, right? Like if we spiral down, we can feel that way with our habits. Like if we're not sleeping well, then we're not eating well, then we're not meditating, we're not exercising, and it just feels like a spiral. But as part of that spiral, there's these parts to it. And I'm just going to highlight them because I think it will be helpful for those who are really feeling stuck in those bad habit spirals and how you can shift this. So let me just say, imagine the spiral, like if you were to look at it from the top down. So you see it more as a circle from the top down. And what you have at the top of the circle, you have your identity, the way you see yourself, who I am. So you might say things like, I'm lazy, or I procrastinate, or I'm never accountable, I never finish, I never start what I... So those are the kinds of things that you say about yourself, the way you see yourself. And the way you see yourself affects your, at the bottom of the circle, you have your behavior. And with your behavior, it's often reflecting the way you see yourself. But the catch here is that your behavior also continues to affirm the way you see yourself, especially when it's in alignment with that identity, right? That bad identity. So like if you think I'm a procrastinator and then you procrastinate, that's only going to keep affirming that procrastination identity. And you just keep spiraling with that. And as you spiral, that gets tighter and tighter until it's like so interwoven, not just how we see ourselves, but the ways we behave. The good news though, is that if we spiral down, we can also spiral up. And we do that with the same cycle, but in different ways. We find moments where we can, it's chicken and the egg, you can do either or, where we shift the way we see ourselves and help create a behavior that supports that compassionate way of seeing ourselves. So maybe we don't have to go to lies. We don't have to say, I never procrastinate, or like, I'm always on top of things. It can be even simple as I am learning how to follow through better. And then you have a behavior that matches that. And when that behavior happens, the trick here is to really take a moment to affirm, this is who I am. I did it. Like I am that person, to affirm, I am learning how to follow through better. And as you do that, you're going to stop that spiral down. You're going to turn it into a spiral up. And the more you do that, not only do your behaviors become more natural, you also shift more in that identity piece too. It just becomes this endless cycle too. Like you continue to say, well, actually, I follow through pretty well. And now you can have that identity, or the other ways that you can shift that too. And I think this is so understated. I don't feel it gets said very much, but the way you see yourself has so much impact on the ways that you behave, for good or for bad.
Absolutely. Yes, I think even a challenge of something small to where you can show up and build that muscle, showing up for yourself, because it's rumination. I realized in my 20s when I struggled with all that stuff, I was in just such a negative habit cycle of this is never going to get better. I've tried everything. I've talked to therapists. I've prayed. I've done this. I've done that. I guess this is just who I am. I'm trying so hard. I have such a firm grip on this and it's still not working. So I was on that track ruminating. When we're constantly focused on the bad or what we're doing wrong, or I need to address this, we're not allowing ourselves to get off that track. And so maybe we just need to start acting, stop thinking so much about it.
I think about this all the time because I have a couple kids with special needs. Like we've got a lot of neurodivergence in our family. And in many ways, having labels has been so helpful. It's helped people have more compassion as they're working with them, especially my child who's autistic. Like having her classmates know that she's autistic has enabled her to continue staying at school because they understood her better. But in the same breath, she's more than the autism, right? It isn't a very essential part of her identity. It is. But it also isn't a stand-in. for who she is. But we do that all the time with ourselves. You know, we say, I'm anxious. And that's true. I'm so glad we've come so far, Diane. Like when I first started podcasting, I didn't plan to talk about mental health so much, but I was talking to a lot of people about their own stories of learning how to grow and to develop. And mental health was such an important part of that, but it wasn't talked about very much. This was 8 years ago. Like it was something that people came to my show because people were actually talking about these things. And in 8 years, now we talk about it all the time in ways that are so transformative, but in ways that we can get stuck. You're right. We can get stuck in those places. And if people can't relate so much to like the mental health piece or even the neurodivergence piece or whatever it is there, I mean, just think about what are the ways that you see yourself? Let's just start with that. Like, let's just say, what's the self-talk there? And how are your behaviors like acting as confirmation bias to those thoughts? And how can you still use those same things to change it, to change both sides?
Yeah, absolutely. I think looking at your life as a whole, and then maybe again, stepping back and saying, what is one small shift I can make to be more like the person I would want? If I could paint a picture of the perfect life, marriage, an ideal motherhood journey, what is one little step that I can make right now to take control back, to not be negative? Because everyone has something. I think that was another thing that kind of broke me out of the negative talk cycle. Everyone has something. I don't want to say be at peace with that, but don't allow it to keep you stuck.
Well, and this is kind of one of those weird things that I like to tell people about bad habits, because like they don't feel good. We don't like the results of them. We do want to change them, and we can validate that. And yes, we can do the work. But at the same time, the best mindset we can have about bad habits is that we are in the mindset of revising them. Because the truth is we will never be totally past them. No one on earth is past bad habits. And I always think about this. I'm like, I'm sure Oprah Winfrey procrastinates here and there, at very least here and there. Like everybody struggles with it to a certain degree of procrastination or not following through or feeling like they get stuck in the numbing behaviors. Like everybody struggles with them to some degree. The key is to try to shape them in a way where more times than not, you are in alignment with knowing who you are and alignment with your values, and that you're living in a way that you're supporting that self the best you can. Because if our goal is to completely remove the bad habits, we will always be disappointed. In some ways, it is like that little, you know, game at the carnivals. You know, you hit one and then another one pops up. And I don't want to disappoint people in saying that. In truth, it's the reverse. It's saying, it's not that we're going to always be feeling that hectic. It's just watch for it. Just to know like, oh yeah, you're going to have something you work on. And then a couple years later, you may have to work on it again. Or it's going to pop up in a different way. And watching for it and being aware of it and being in that mindset of revision is going to help you work through it better than, again, going down the shame spiral because, oh, what? I'm a terrible human. Why am I working on sleep again? I already fixed this.
Yeah. And I think those bad habits can come up in various seasons too, but you have to continually show up because we are flawed humans and it's not easy. What we're saying is not easy.
Well, and actually, Diane, this may be helpful because I don't want to end on a note where people are like, well, great. I will always have to work on things and this stinks. Let's give them some, because you're right. The truth is that we work on this in small ways. Occasionally, we need to work on bigger things and we need to make that big leap and put in a ton more effort. But most of the time, if we're aiming for sustainable change, we do it in incremental ways, in ways that are small, but still meaningful. And that's where we're looking for moments of change, moments of alignment, moments where our behavior is matching this identity or this new way we're trying to see ourselves. So let me give them just some tools then. So that way they feel like they can act better and then kind of go up that progress cycle, going up instead of down that we talked about. And I'm going to talk about this in the framework of numbing behavior, because you had a great thread there that you were able to pinpoint for yourself on what was at the heart of some more numbing behaviors for you. And numbing behaviors are the ways that we are trying to just basically cope with life. And we think they're numbing, but they're not. Every time I ask people, like, how do you feel when you're binge watching shows or when you can't get off the phone or when you are stuck with gaming or whatever it may be, the numbing behavior, sometimes people, it looks like actually productivity. It looks like obsessively cleaning or organizing, stuff like that. So it's, again, this is why it's subjective what bad habits are. But when I ask people, how do you feel? I get results like I feel guilty. I feel frustrated. I feel angry. I feel sad. I've never had anyone say numb. I feel numb when I'm in the numbing behavior. But that's what we're trying to do with these behaviors. So let me tell you the three ends of numbing behavior. So when you get sucked in that unintentional bad habit that's trying to numb you, but isn't, it's not working, it's not serving its purpose very well. It's trying, but it's not doing it very well. Here's what you can do. The first N is to notice. In the moment, all you do is you notice the numbing behavior. And you can just call it for what it is. Okay? Like, oh, this is numbing behavior. The second N is to name. You name what feelings you're trying to numb. For some people, that may be boredom. It may be that you're feeling overwhelmed or anxious or frustrated or sad. So what, name the feelings you're trying to numb. And then the third N is next, where you decide what's next. And here's the kicker. A lot of times when you are working on your numbing behavior in particular, especially if it's something that comes up quite often, like online shopping maybe is a thing that you just find yourself, you're always there. You're like, why am I in these checkouts again? Like, why am I doing this? And like going through that whole cycle of getting things and then trying to return most of it to not all, you know, if not all of it. And why do I do that? The key here is once you've noticed and you've gotten into the habit of naming what's really going on, you get to decide what's next. And initially, you choose the behavior. You actually choose the same behavior, but you choose it in ways that feel intentional. So I do this on Instagram. Like if I'm scrolling Instagram, because I go in and out of waves of that bad habit. Like sometimes it's just so easy to not be on there, or like I can feel really intentional with it and it's serving a good purpose. And other times it's a coping mechanism, right? It is me numbing. So I notice it. I name what's really going on. And then what's next? I can either choose to not do the behavior, to do something else, or I can actually still choose the behavior. I'm like, oh no, I do need a break right now. Like my brain is stretched and I just need to have a moment where I'm not thinking about all the other things going on in my life. Okay, I know that. What's next? I'm going to choose to be on Instagram for the next 10, 15 minutes. And maybe I'll set an alarm on my Alexa so I remember that, or my phone. So it's the intention piece that changes so much of if these behaviors are actually helping us or not. And if that doesn't work for you, then it is choosing a different behavior. And instead, what's next can be a behavior or habit that actually supports the feelings that you were trying to help soothe with that numbing behavior. And it'll be a lot more effective in the end. So those three ends, again, were notice, name, next. When you get stuck in those numbing behaviors.
Yeah, that's a great word. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this with my listeners. This was so helpful. Where else can they connect with you online if they want to do so?
Thanks again for having me, Diane. They can go to my podcast About Progress. Whatever app you're listening on, just go search for me and listen to a couple episodes, and I hope you'll follow along. I'm also on Instagram at About Progress, and I love to be there. It's just a great community.
Yeah. Well, Monica, thanks so much for joining me today. This was great.
Thank you, Diane.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links, resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at minimalistmomspodcast.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as my book, Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity, or other ways to connect or work with me online. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends on social media is very helpful and will encourage others on their journey to think more and do with less.